45 years ago, Hmong political refugees began a journey from Laos to the United States, and we look at that journey and why many now call Wisconsin home. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest, author Maizong Vu, was born in Laos, came to Wisconsin as a child. Maizong is a graduate of UW-Madison, a cultural trainer and folklore performer in the Hmong Poetry, Song, and Storytelling Society. She serves as president of the Hmong Institute Board of Directors and has served as an advocate for refugees for 20 years or so. Maizong has a new book out about the Hmong in Wisconsin, and we'll talk with her about the book and about Hmong institutions here in Wisconsin. There's also an upcoming speaker series, so we'll maybe talk about some of those events as well. So what questions do you have about the Hmong journey to America? And perhaps you have your own experiences with the Hmong to share. I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about their culture? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Maizong Vu joins us by phone. Maizong, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry, for having me today. Yes.
It was a great pleasure. And I just got your book a day ago, so I haven't had a chance to read it carefully. But I've gone through it, and I'm finding it very, very interesting. There's, you know, I'm old enough, I was around when the Hmong first started coming, but I'd forgotten a little about the history, and it was really great for me to be kind of reminded about how and why Hmong people came to Wisconsin.
Right. And it is often we're, you know, busy, so we don't, you know, track the back to the history part. And so, yeah, it can be forgotten easily.
Yeah. And your own history, I think, is interesting. Talk about your own arrival.
Sure. So, you know, I always have a lot to say because I arrived as a teenager. And as a teenager, you learn the language faster than your parents. So then you ended up, you know, being the interpreter and then soon the advocate, and soon your roles reverse and you do all the things that your parents are supposed to do. And that, you know, pretty I call it a curse and a privilege at the same time.
So the curse part of it was?
Is that you have to learn to navigate the system and let the system know who you are. And instead of, you know, the system being in place to help you, you're doing a lot of the education to let the system know who you are, why you're here, and what is it that you need help with. So you know, all of those are on the shoulder of your own without any support. Yeah. So that's the curse. The privilege is that you have the opportunity to, you know, build bridges and let people know who you are and why you're here. So that's why I said it's, you know, both a privilege and a curse.
Yeah.
But, I came, yeah. So as a teenager in 1980, my family was in the refugee camp for about 5 years before we were resettled here. So I myself left Laos, you know, in a young age and pretty much kind of grew up in the camp and, you know the camp as my life before I got here. So when I got here as a teenager, you know, I always laughed about how we arrived here in about this time of the year. It's almost March. School is almost done. So they decided not to put us in school, but found us a retired ESL teacher who, you know, was in Kimberley, and we lived in Kakana, so we had to bike every day from Kakana to Kimberley, you know, rain or shine, and go learn ABC. And then in the fall, I went to Kakana High School. And so I always say, you know, I have lots of culture class stories to tell because being a teenager and the expectations for you at home and then at school are so different, and then having to navigate everything on your own is so challenging. And I always tell a story about me and my cousin. You know, when we went to school, we disappear in school for a whole month until they could figure out what went wrong. And that has to do with our, you know, traumatic experience in gym, where, you know, we grew up pretty private. Our body parts are only for us, right? And so in gym, where we're mandated to take our clothes off and take a shower after gym. And we were so traumatized that, you know, I always say teenage Caucasian girls are much better built and bigger size. So to see them is just another trauma.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and, you know, just you came in the 80s, and I think in the 70s when some of the first Hmong folks arrived in Wisconsin, and many of them had not, I mean, they didn't, hadn't had a refrigerator, for example, or a freezer,
right.
You know, a lot of things that we all take for granted, those of us who grew up here.
It is. We always laugh nowadays, yes, because we can laugh about it, but at that time it's pretty scary. And so, you know, I like to tell some of the story that my own family or my extended family or relative went through. And so I always remember my distant relative's mother-in-law. They landed in New Freedom in, you know, the Green Bay area, and they did not teach her about how to turn the water on, right? And then they went to work, and she was, you know, as a grandma, very hospitable, so she cooked for them. And when they came back, she told them, and she said, well, you know, this crystal water is so clear, and this is where I got the water to cook, you know, and it was from the toilet.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, so stories that, you know, it's disorientation to the new environment, you know, pretty much.
And Wisconsin, we have the third largest population of Hmong, I think, in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And Wisconsin was, why did so many land here?
Why? That is such a good question, Larry. Many people don't know that we don't know what the United States landscapes look like. We don't know what's north and what's south and what has snow and what doesn't, you know, have snow. And so we, you know, I always joke that if we know that it's so cold to your bone, we probably would choose California over Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
The reality is we do not know, and we are by default at the mercy of whoever sponsor us from the churches. So many people probably don't know, but a lot of refugees are embraced by the church, the faith-based community who initially sponsor the refugee. So wherever your sponsor is, that's where you go. And so that's why, like I said, if we have a choice and if we knew about the weather, we probably, you know, all landed in California.
Well, I can understand that, but I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here. I hope you are, too.
Yeah, I am now, because I think I was just talking about this with my co-worker yesterday, that when we first came here, we thought, oh, American people have such a warm blood because they walk so, you know, comfortably outside in the dead winter and all of that. And it's only, you know, years later that we discover, oh, there is such a thing as under, you know, garment where you put layers and layers underneath you. And so, you know, we're learning how to be Wisconsinites.
You know, every one of our lines is filled with people who want to comment, ask questions, and so forth. My song. So I want to take some calls. Claudia, I have Claudia in Eau Claire. We'll go to you. Hi, Claudia.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. And I am very sympathized on immigrants' story, and that's for generations, because America is the land of immigrants. And, you know, Hmongs story is in particular, you know, since I came over here as immigrant and understand, I did my study when I was in UW Eau Claire that time. So I know a little bit more, so I'm more willing to share that. The story of Hmong's refugee has been changed a couple times, many times even. And I think thinking about it in old country, and they are very backward people, you know, very low cultured. So when they come to the United States, they should be very grateful that the American government and the people, you know, give them all kind of unbelievable assistance to help them to root it here. And the second generation or more generation of Hmong grow up from the United States, they should already, you know, they already become so mainstream. And they have teachers, they have elected government officials, and they should be grateful. Instead, you know, they are continuously whining and begging for more privileges, you know, for more benefits. And I don't see the benefits right now, you know. You have to use the Hmong interpretation because the older generation is mostly passed away.
Yeah.
The younger generation, you know, after 70. And they already grew up from United States, land of freedom, like all the other ethnic, you know, immigrants. They already got all the benefit and to learn to speak English. So there is no extra assistance or any kind of injustice or inequality exists anymore.
Well, let me get a comment from Mai Zong on this. Mai Zong?
Uh-huh. I think Claudia, is on target when you talk about, you know, the experience of e-com. I think the word that people put on us, you know, may be generalized in terms of all of that. But despite the hardship and despite what we, meaning our parents, sacrifices for the secret war, all of that, we haven't, you know, recognized our veterans for their sacrifices. So that piece, I think it's still, you know, a little hard for them. As far as success, yes, you know, despite all the hardship and all the stuff, and we do, you know, get the basic fundamental shelter from the government. I am a product of the food stamp, so I'm very thankful for that. And many of us are very thankful for that. And we become, you know, Wisconsinites, where we are citizens working, paying for taxes. And so I think we are, you know, coming a long way as far as the issue of interpreters. I think that is still a great need because we still have grandparents who lived here and who came here without the language. And like I said, when you come, when you're older, you can't learn another language. So you still need that. And that is still, you know, a small need in the community. But in general, it's not a huge need in terms of interpreter issues.
Well, I think if as you look at the generation, this generation of Hmong overcame a lot. I mean, when you look at the culture, the difference in the culture, and to be able to try and maintain your own culture while at the same time integrating into the United States and Wisconsin in particular. I mean, that, and then to have achieved, I was saying, you know, Claudia was calling from Eau Claire. If I'm not mistaken, there were, there may have been a mayor of Eau Claire who was Hmong, or am I wrong?
Not a mayor, but there's city council.
City council.
Or, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there have been a lot of advancements and successes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with such a short time, there's so much that, you know, we have contributed to our new home. And, you know, the piece that I think a lot of people don't know is that we are, you know, a new group, a new kid in the block that brought with us strong family values that I believe, you know, two, three decades ago, your grandparents, Larry,
right,
or, you know, those before us, your parents probably brought with them the same strong family values where you work hard and you pay your dues and then you pay forward to other community. And I think that's where we are right now, where we are continuing to be Wisconsinites, work and pay our share and also help newcomers as well.
Talking today with Maizong Vu. Maizong has authored a new book. It's called Hmong in Wisconsin. And so we're talking a bit about the book and answering questions and comments from listeners. Certainly you can join in as well with your own questions or comments. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at a new book on the Hmong, it's called Hmong in Wisconsin by Maizong Vu. Maizong, our guest today, for the next 20 minutes or so to talk with us about the history of Hmong as she talks about it in her book, and certainly to take your questions and comments as well as we move along today. You can join in at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chris and Adams, we'll go to you next. Hi, Chris.
I want to welcome you. The elephant in the room, obviously, is the Vietnam War. And I have some personal experience with dealing with that. I have a relative who was a sniper in the secret war. I mean, it was never acknowledged by the U.S. government where your people were living. And so we weren't helping them, really. And they took on the Viet Cong pretty much with our troops by themselves. My relative was twice MIA POW, a Foreign Legion of Honor recipient, multiple Purple Hearts, multiple stars, highly decorated person. And it's highly possible, probable, that the Hmong not only reported where he was so that he could get rescued, but were also giving him data on where the Viet Cong camps were positioned so that he could go and get rid of these people to get them off their land. We owe your community. We owe them. Whatever you think about the Vietnam War, one way or another, your community came forth to protect their lands and protect our troops. We owe them.
Well, Chris, I thank you very much for calling. Maizong, a comment?
I'm getting a little quiet because I'm getting a lot of emotion coming in, but thank you, Chris. Thank you for that. Yeah, this is very personal for me because, you know, I think about my father. I think about a lot of the parents, and you said it very well, the feeling that our parents felt, and that is, they say, when the American want us to fight, they don't require citizen. But now, when they want to give us something, they have to say we have to be a citizen. And why is that? So you know, this is a very touchy, sentimental issue for all of us who have parents who, you know, made that sacrifice. So thank you for sharing that. And the story that we have yet to unfold is really some of the veterans who are still living now, like my brother-in-law, who have, you know, metal in their brain, in their body, because they incur that during the war, protecting, rescuing down pilots and spying for the, you know, intelligence for the U.S. and all of those stories are not told. And that's a whole world that needs to be unfold. And we haven't even touched that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And there, a lot of that was, unfortunately, I think you comment on that in your book, that a lot of that was not made public to the people during the war.
Right. And that's a piece where I think we are, you know, coming in a time when in the United States, the Vietnam War is not a very popular war. And people here don't embrace, you know, those people who went over. And so that environment is already, you know, a environment that's not welcoming. And so when we come, we were, again, all secreted because only the church people knew about us and bringing us here, but then there is no grand announcement to the rest of the world by the government that said we welcome the Hmong because they were our allies, you know, in the Vietnam War, and please, you know, embrace and welcome them. There's no such thing. So again, we experience this whole resettlement experience of being very secreted.
Yeah. Nancy in Grafton will give you a chance. Thank you, Nancy, for calling.
Well, good morning. I grew up in Marathon County, which is the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. And we had ginseng growers up there, and they had a lot of Hmong people that came and worked those ginseng farms. Now I understand, and I don't know, I've never heard much on the news about it, except one time when they were talking about the United or the state of Wisconsin planning to send people who, there are people here in Hmong people who are not probably citizens, and they want to ship them back to their homeland. And these people grew up here in Wisconsin. They know the English language. They know nothing about their home language, probably, or the Hmong language. And so what the heck are we going to do in the state of Wisconsin? Are we going to do something stupid like taking people who worked with their hands and on the knees and everything else, working hard in our state? Are we going to try to send them back? What's going on? Thank you.
Well, Mai Zong, I'm sure you've heard some of that in the news at
yes.
the federal level.
Yes, yes. We heard that. And at the Hmong Institute, we are getting a lot of call from the community, you know, panicking about when is it going to be my turn? You know, when am I going to get a letter and what's going to happen? So that's a great need that we are trying to get volunteer to come and help meet some of those need in terms of now, you know, a lot of people say, well, then I need to start learning, you know, my citizenship and go take my test. So that's something that we are very well aware of. And I think, you know, the whole thing that is very sad is that we are going back to the era of, you know, refugee where people don't think that we can survive in this country. So we initially were getting a little hesitation on the U.S. government side about resettling the Hmong in the first place anyway. And now we are having, you know, a trigger all over again, being traumatized about who we are and, you know, what we're not needed and wanted. And that's a very hard thing to swallow for our elders, for our veterans who, you know, again, have yeah. made great sacrifices for the community. So I think for the question of what are we going to do about it, I think, you know, everybody can certainly write to our government and educate our government about the work that the Hmong have done for the United States, and that's all we can do.
I think about 50% of the Hmong population in Wisconsin is officially a resident of the U.S.?
I think, yeah, I don't have the data in front of me, but I think, either 50 or probably a little bit more. Because
yeah.
if I think about my own family, you know, we have just one or two that is not citizen.
Yeah.
So.
We have Jill in Milwaukee online with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to say that I did refugee relief work in the various camps in Thailand from 1985 to 1989. And I wondered if our guest speaker would talk a little bit about her experience of the refugee camps. And I wanted to say that one of the important things to us at the time, and so I'm speaking as a member of a Japanese refugee relief organization. It was an international group, but we are based in Tokyo. One really precious thing to us was preserving the culture of the people, both language, medicinal, like healing arts, and dance and like that. And, you know, I hope that that has continued to benefit the people who've come to the U.S., but I was just wondering if you could just talk about your experience.
Sure. So as I said earlier, I grew up in a refugee camp for 5 years. So, you know, when we first got there to the camp, we slept on, you know, grass as tall as our waist until it turns into dust. And that's when we finally have our shelter, you know, our tent built up and so forth. So everybody's experience is very similar in terms of malnutrition, you know, starvation, limited resources, and all of that. In my time there, you know, the earlier when not many people got to Thailand, the distribution of food, you know, was adequate. UNHCR, you know, had the resources to do that. But as more people come in, we crowded the camp like sardine pack and limited resource because you still have, you know, similar size of portion for the whole crew rather than, you know, the smaller. So everything, you know, is very tough, but our parents are very resourceful people. They, you know, try to go and make money by doing manual labors outside of camp whenever they can. Many of them get tortured and, you know, hurt when they do that by, you know, the people when they go outside of camp, but they still do that just to bring food on the table for the children. So it's a tough life, but, you know, it's better than being in Laos where bombshell was be dropped on you or your dad will be living in fear of being captured by, you know, the communists because you are an ally of the United States. So that's, yeah, we can talk about that all day, but that's, you know, it's hard. And many of us, you know, we don't know where we're going to land. We just, you know, keep praying that somebody will, you know, look after us and be our angel and, you know, lend us a hand. Yeah. As far as preservation, yeah, that's very important for the community. So organization like the Hmong Institute, we are definitely trying to address the preservation of the language, the culture, the arts, as an effort to build our children a little bit stronger and resilient because many of us probably know that when you don't know who you are and you're very hollow, you grow up to be, you know, mentally challenged, right? Because you're not happy with who you are and you don't know who you are. So we, you know, we are trying to do that at the Hmong Institute to educate and preserve language and culture and all of that.
Jill, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take another call. Cindy in Eau Claire, your turn. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for your work. And good morning. Is it Mai?
Mai Zhang.
Mai Zhang?
Yes, mm-hmm. Mai Zhang. Good morning. I remember reading a newspaper in a waiting room in a medical facility. And on the second, the front page of the second section of the St. Paul Pioneer Press was a picture of a lovely Hmong woman who had gone to college and started a magazine. And I just thought, how amazing. I can't imagine going to Laos and learning the language enough to go to college, graduate, and start a magazine in the Laos language. And I was just so impressed by that. And my father was in the military, knew the Vietnamese people to be very wonderful themselves. And I think it's very important that we understand more about the stories, the actual stories of, I know, the men who became pilots. And I think others maybe, did they also work with the Army? But I think it would be very good for those individual stories to be coming out in the press and YouTubes and interviews. I think it would help people to understand that we were, people don't even know that you were refugees. And so those two things, to bring out the cooperation and help, the tremendous commitment that you all made to our military forces, and that you were refugees because you were then rejected by your own country and not treated well at all. So I think that needs to come forward more, and a lot, I hope that more could be done about that to help people here understand.
Thank you, Cindy, for calling. Mai Zhang, comment?
Yeah, I think that point of the refugee is so important, Larry, because many times many people don't know the differences between a refugee and an immigrant. And, you know, I always want to make the point that for an immigrant, they are going because they want to improve their life. And so they often know who's on the other end, you know, waiting for them. They know where they're going. Like in the case of what we talked about earlier about the weather, they know what kind of weather it's going to be like over there because they plan ahead of time. For the refugee, you know, we move because we don't want to get killed by other people. So there's often no time to plan, no time to really think about where you're going and who's on the other end waiting for you. So this, you know, distinction is very important for people to know because the experiences of refugee and immigrants are, you know, yet similar but very different. So thank you for bringing that point out. And Eau Claire should be proud for the people of Eau Claire because you guys have produced, you know, many great Hmong leaders in Wisconsin. So, for example, Dr. Pafoyang, the first Hmong medical doctor, is, you know, someone who grew up in Eau Claire. And then, you know, came to Madison to do her medical school, and it's now in St. Paul. But so Eau Claire, you know, has a lot of support. And so, you know, people in Eau Claire should be proud of what they have helped produce in the Hmong community.
And, you know, Cindy, to your point about letting people know, I wanted to bring up that there is a speaker series in coordination with the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, which, by the way, published Mahjong's book, Hmong in Wisconsin. It's a statewide celebration speaker and discussion series to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the Hmong diaspora.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, and so if anybody would like to have this dialogue, you know, and to come and share your experience with, you know, the Hmong community or to just dialogue or make new friends, yeah, come to these free events. They are going to take place starting March 21st in the Appleton-Fox City area, which, you know, Senator Mimoa from Minnesota, who grew up in Appleton, is coming home to speak about her own experience about what was it like being a refugee on that first series in Appleton, and then moving to April 4th in La Crosse, we're going to talk about the power partnership, you know, how Hmong men has taken on the role of developing MAAs, which is mutual assistance associations, and really partner with the state government to get, you know, Hmong off public assistance. Many of you don't know, but like in the 80s, 90s, we have a high rate of people on public assistance. But by 2004, we're down to like 4%. And that's a huge, you know, achievement by the MAAs that, you know, we like to talk about. Or on the 18th, you know, in Wausau is celebrating race relations, embracing cultural diversity. So there, you know, we will have a keynote talking about, you know, how to embrace each other and, you know, share some of our story. And then moving on to Milwaukee is where you will hear the American veterans talking about our contribution to the United States during and after the Secret War. And this will be a panel of, you know, Hmong veterans who are United States as well as, you know, from Secret War. And then we will move down to Eau Claire and we will talk about, you know, the good things in Eau Claire community is that we have so many Hmong rising up to take on civic participation and become elected officials. And then we will, and in Milwaukee on May 2nd with the series with Dr. Yashal from UW-Madison, who's going to talk about education is a key to success. And that is something that every Hmong parents believe in their heart, and they work hard to make sure that their children, you know, can succeed in education, even though they don't speak a word of English. You know, I think about my father when he met Rita Thompson, because my younger brother was the Badger State Senator at that time. He couldn't speak any word of English, and I asked him when he came home, and I said, "So how does it feel to meet the governor of the state?" And he said, "I had a whole stomach full of words, but they won't come out."
Oh, my goodness. Well,
Mm-hmm. And then we'll end up with a diaspora banquet on the 15th to really celebrate everything. So I encourage you guys to go to all of these series that's free, and the banquet, of course, we have to pay for the banquet. So that will be a ticket banquet.
And to find out some more about the celebration and all the different events, I think if it, people just go to wisconsinhistory.org,
mm-hmm.
wisconsinhistory.org, of course, that's the Wisconsin Historical Society site, all of that information is presented there. And I believe we also have a link on our Facebook, or on our page, WPR.org/Larry. I think you're going to find some information about what's going on in your area of the state.
Right. Or they can, just type in the Monk Institute, and you can find it on our Facebook as well.
Ah, Monk Institute, of course. Yeah, that makes sense as well. Barry in Appleton had a question for you. You mentioned education. And Barry, I think, has a comment related to it. Barry?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Larry. I'm a former educator in Kakana and Appleton. And I've got to know many.
Hi.
You're from
Kakana?
You may
have been my high. Yeah, I went to Kakana High School.
So you know Gene and some of the people that worked with our Hmong population? Yes,
Mr. Hubbard.
And my yes, Mr. Hubbard. And my question, my Zhang is, you know, knowing so many kids who've come and tried to learn English and learned English, and of course the Hmong language is, it's a very difficult language to learn English from because of the range of vocabulary and so on. It's quite different, and yet. Kids, you guys did that, and not only that, but the interest in education is so strong. I know, the Vu family from Kakana, and
I think it's your family.
You have a brother at Yale and another brother at Harvard, I believe.
Yep.
And you have, and you have a. I just met your oldest brother, Blong. He did a presentation for. Appleton as a part of the performing arts series, and I made the connection there, and he has done very well, and a number of other Kuatao was involved in that, and it was talking about Asian. What do you attribute the strength of the interest in higher education and education within the culture coming from what was really an agrarian culture in Laos, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great question because sometimes people think that we live in a country where we are very independent and we don't use education in terms of learning how to read and write in other languages. And so we must not value education, but that's not true at all. Our parents are so into education and they recognize that when they first got here in the United States, the only way for their children to succeed and to survive in this new world is to be educated in their new home. And so even though people like my parents, you know, who don't write and read in English, they know the value of education. So my father, you know, I always say at our annual meeting, his only advice to us on education is, I brought you here. School is at your doorstep. If you don't work hard and you don't go to school and you don't finish, that's not my fault. It's yours. And so our parents are, you know, they value education. That's why they work so hard. Some parents work two jobs just to make sure they can pay for their college education for their kids. So education is, you know, something that our parents know is vital and they know how to do that. My mom, for example, modeled education for us. She, you know, at her age, when she arrived, she valued education and modeled so hard where she would ride a bus from Kakana to Appleton and on a back just so she could interact with a Caucasian person so she can practice her English.
Mm.
Or she'll go to the thrift store just so she could, you know, have a conversation with a clerk. So that's so important because they recognize that. So thank you.
And Barry, thank you. And Mahjong, thank you so much for being with us today and for writing this book, Hmong in Wisconsin, published by the University, by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. It's been a real pleasure visiting with you, and I hope a lot of people get a chance to read your book and a lot of people get a chance to meet you. You're an extraordinary person. Thank you very much, Mahjong.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for having me. And thank you, everybody, for, calling in.
Lots of great calls today. I want to thank you for that. It's been a struggle for the Hmong community in some ways, but they've achieved, the achievements have been so great. It's a wonderful history to learn about and read about, and I hope you'll have a chance to take a look at her book. There was another struggle that went on earlier in our history, long before the events and time we're talking about just now. We're going back to the Civil War next, and not talk so much about the battles that took place between the North and the South, mostly in the eastern part of the country, but there's a whole area in the West, like about 40% of our country is located there, and the Civil War took place there, too. And Megan Kate Nelson has a new book out. She calls it The Three-Cornered War. I found it fascinating, and I'm looking forward to talking to her next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.